Greetings, greetings once again to all my enemies and all my friends. You may have heard the news, but stand by now for the worldview. That's right. We're back. It's a special midweek edition here, the Weekly Worldview. It's the show where we don't take calls, we don't tolerate sponsors, but we do focus on the events of the week through the lens of original thought. Glad to have you all aboard. I hate to fly. Have I ever told you how much I hate to fly? I hate to fly. I spent the last 2 weeks flying all over the Western United. Well, the Eastern United States, too. Jamaica, Queens, to Bismarck, North Dakota. A whirlwind tour, and one of those things you just can't do by car, so I had to condescend to actually fly. And Frontier has new seats that I think they got from Guantanamo Bay. They're 3/4 inch thick, solid plastic with a thin strip of fake leather over them for padding. And so try flying from Denver to LaGuardia on that and not having a kink in your neck that doesn't last for a week. Just brutal. But the seats are skinnier, thinner, and so they can pack more people onto the plane. And I mean, I understand it all, but it's just so inhumane. I'm going to try not to do anything that puts me in a situation where I have to fly again anytime soon. Yeah, Frontier, get out of here with that. They're also always late. Every flight was late. Every single flight. But I'm not going to complain. I don't want to start off just complaining. Good news, the Bird Whisperer is established as the Bird Whisperer, and I don't think there's another. Now, the sparrow that initially was rescued at the mall now lives outside during the day and comes in at night like a civilized being. Yep. Every night, comes home like clockwork. The Bird Whisperer goes out in the yard, calls the bird by name, a sparrow, mind you, from the wild. And it comes home like calling in your dog. It's just strange. But she is established as, I believe, the world's first bird whisperer. I may be wrong about that. I'm not sure I've ever heard of anything like that before. So let's see. What else has been going on that's fun besides the news? We're going to get to the news. I've been debating my atheist bass player on Facebook. Guitar player. I don't want to insult him. He might listen. I don't know. I kind of doubt it. Anyway, we've got into a debate over origins. He's an old Earth evolutionist, big banger. I put up a post about Pluto questioning old Earth cosmology, and he made some smart-aleck comment, and then I leapt on that. We've been going back and forth for the better part of a week. He basically said that Moses was a geocentrist. Well, he said Moses thought that the sun spun around the Earth. I used the term geocentrist, and then I'm sure he went and looked it up and figured out what it meant. So I told him, I said, listen, give me any evidence that Moses held to a geocentric cosmology, and I'll admit you're right. I said, I'll give you all five books that he wrote, if you can find any evidence in the first five books of the Bible. I'm not sure he realized Moses wrote the first five books of the Bible. So I've already helped the cat just by educating him. Anyway, he sort of begged off here at the end because I think he saw that my request for evidence on Moses' geocentrism was really just a thinly veiled ploy to get him to read the Bible. Just now, hopefully he's searching through the Pentateuch right now, trying to find evidence that Moses thought that the sun spun around the earth. Anyway, that's been a really good time. And my extremely attractive audio engineer. So I've gotten distracted now. She asked me, why are you wasting time with him? He's a hardcore atheist. Why do you waste your time with these people? I said, well, you know, where there's life, there's hope. And maybe some of his atheist friends are watching the debate. So you never know who you might be able to get to when you just speak the truth. In love. Has it been? Well, I've been a little less than loving at certain times. But he's a foul-mouthed, vulgar heathen, so it's hard to maintain civility, but that's been a good time. On the downside, ladies and gentlemen, this past week, Scott Walker and the pro-life industry. You heard about Scott Walker, right? He is now carrying the pro-life mantle into the Republican presidential campaign. He's been ordained as the most pro-life candidate, I do believe, from what all I can tell. From the glowing and gushing that's going on the various pro-life industry websites. The puff pieces they write about Scott Walker, talking about how pro-life he is. So, and I know some of you people like Scott Walker. Hear me out on this, okay? Scott Walker and the pro-life industry, I'm talking about a National Right to Life, Operation Rescue, Troy Newman, Life News with that hack. What's his name? I don't even remember his name. Ertelt. Dick Ertelt or Biff? Skip Ertelt. Steve Ertelt, yeah. All those hacks. They have finally, successfully driven the final nail in the coffin of the right to life in the United States of America. Scott Walker signed a bill authorizing about 1 million abortions a year nationwide. It's the so-called 20-week ban, allegedly banning abortions after 20 weeks, but basically acknowledging the legality and the civility of all other abortions, which is like almost all of them are before 20 weeks. By the way, they call it a late-term abortion ban. Excuse me, but 20 weeks is halfway through the term. So I don't think that qualifies as late term. By definition, late term would have to be more than halfway. But now, anyone who supports only 1 million abortions a year can call themselves pro-life. And Scott Walker, I believe, in a seminal moment in American history, basically has abolished the God-given right to life from the American conscience. The God-given right to life of every person is no longer the standard in America. And I know it's been eroding for some time. I understand that. But what Walker and the pro-life industry will do, if he's successful in his run for the presidency, which I think he's probably got the best shot of anyone, Scott Walker, what they will do is they will officially remove the right to life from the political conscience of America. And I'm sorry, folks, that is the standard upon which our nation is built. The unalienable right to life. It's the first one mentioned in our Declaration. And it's gone, or it will be gone, finally. As it's been eroded, it will now be completely cast aside, locked deep black hole of pro-choice politics. The four horsemen of the pro-choice apocalypse have done the dirty deed. Scott Walker, Steve Ertelt. Who's the other one? Troy Newman. There's another one, too. I can't think of her name. I don't remember these people's names because I really don't have any respect for them. Her name is Jill Stanek. Yes, she's going around the country shilling for the pro-choice side now. She's pro-choice with exceptions. Anyway, it's just depressing. I sent out a rebuke to the four horsemen, just telling them that I'm rebuking you in front of God and man for destroying the right to life and for basically making the end of legal abortion in America impossible. That's what you have accomplished this past week, and that's what will be accomplished if Scott Walker, even if he has a successful campaign, he doesn't even have to win. They've just basically changed the dynamic. It's a new paradigm now. You can be for some baby killing, and then you're still pro-life. And you get a wink and a nod. Meanwhile, ladies and gentlemen, we go into the war file. John Kerry, as you know, and Barry Ho and his MO and all of those, they announced this past week that they'd made the deal with Iran. Nobody really knows what the deal is for or what it's about, but the deal is done. And I had wondered, what about the Americans who are being held in chains in Iranian hellhole prisons? What about them? Were they part of the deal? It seems as if they were completely ignored. But John Kerry says that's not the case. The AP reports that Kerry says there wasn't a single meeting that took place during the Iranian nuclear talks in which Kerry didn't raise the issue of the four Americans held captive in Tehran. In fact, Kerry insists that the issue was discussed at the final meeting just before they announced the landmark deal. Kerry and his team apparently failed to secure the release of former U.S. Marine Amir Hekmati, Pastor Saeed Abedini, reporter Jason Rezian, and retired FBI agent Robert Levinson. He failed. So he brought it up at the last meeting, and the Iranians said, no, no, thank you. We will keep your prisoners. I'm mocking you to your face. And John Kerry reached across the table and shook their hands and said, I think we have a deal. Unbelievable. This is the caliber of person negotiating for our side. It's a wonder that the crescent moon isn't flying over the White House already. We must just be lucky. Unbelievable. Meanwhile, by the way, Iran, that's the Shia side of the maniacal Islamists hell-bent on taking over the world. That's the Shia side. Meanwhile, on the Sunni side, ISIS continues to rampage across North Africa and the Middle East, reportedly kidnapping three African Christians in eastern Libya just at the beginning of this week. They published these three Christians' passports online as evidence that they had kidnapped them. Also in Libya, ISIS brutally crucified a man accused of spying. They posted a video of that execution on social media, as they are wont to do so often. Breitbart reports that ISIS has gained a foothold in Libya since the Arab Spring and the deposition of dictator Muammar Gaddafi. You remember Hillary Clinton? Remember what she said about Muammar Gaddafi? We came, we saw, he died, she said. And meanwhile, the only thing that kept the Islamists from the throats of the Christians was removed. And that was fear of a dictator like Gaddafi. I think Hillary Clinton has blood on her hands. Not that I'm going to mention Hillary Clinton anymore, because almost nobody mentions her anymore. So she's almost not worth mentioning. But the Ayatollah, well, let's go back to the Sunni side. No, wait, was that Sunni? That was Sunni. ISIS is Sunni. Iran is Shia, two sides of the same coin, two arms of the pincer set up against Western civilization. So we go back to the Shia side, the Grand Ayatollah, not just any Ayatollah, the Grand Supreme Ayatollah, Ali Khamenei. He made a TV appearance as a means of responding to the Iranian deal that was made by Barry and Kerry and that outfit. He appeared on television, and he was holding an AK-47, and nobody noticed. He gave a speech basically saying, death to America, death to Israel, we'll do whatever we want. And he had an AK-47 on the stage with him, right at his right hand, during the entire speech. And Breitbart reports that journalists from the Associated Press, Reuters, the French press agency, and the New York Times offered analysis of Khamenei's words, but not one even made a passing reference to the presence of an AK-47 in his hands while he made the speech. Now, some of you people may not be familiar with the communications tactics of the Islamists. When they make a video where they're holding an AK-47 in their hands, that means whatever they're telling you could be a lie, and Allah blesses it. He doesn't care, because he understands that it's all about the jihad. And, now there was some questions. Well, maybe there wasn't an AK-47. Maybe we just thought we saw that. So the Ayatollah, just to put a fine point on it, on his official website, he posted a close-up photo taken of the rifle from beside the podium, which showed the whole thing, even the magazine. So there was no question that he gave the speech mocking America, mocking the deal, in utter defiance, with an AK-47 right there in his hands, and the Western media chose not to notice it. John Kerry says he is somewhat disturbed, apparently, by the whole death to America thing, seeing as he shook the man's hand and he thought we had a deal. But apparently the Iranians have a different view of the deal. And, well, all bets are off now. Katie bar the door. I don't know what's going to happen over there, but the chances are at least one of the countries within the sphere of influence of Iran will detonate a nuclear bomb in the next 2 years. Either Iran or one of their neighbors. Because I think the arms race is on. And I think Barry loves it. Because I think he just loves chaos. He thinks chaos is good, and he's brought us as much as we can possibly stand, and we'll be lucky if any of us survive. I'm on my way to the promised land. Hey! I'm on the highway to hell. Highway to hell. I'm on the highway to hell. Highway to hell. Don't stop me. You know, the thing is that, thanks, boys. The thing is I don't want to be on that highway. See, Bon Scott and the boys, that's where they wanted to be. We're being dragged alongside the Barry and Carrie show straight to hell, straight to some kind of nuclear conflagration, which will approximate hell. Let's go to the Capitol. Yes, the Capitol. It's a Capitol idea. You may have noticed the flags were flown at half staff at the U.S. Capitol in honor of the four Marines and sailor who were murdered last week by an Islamist terrorist in Chattanooga, Tennessee. I never thought I'd say that. An Islamist terrorist kills Marines in Chattanooga, Tennessee. It's almost surreal to even think that happened, but it did. Barry, he didn't lower the flag at the White House. He didn't lower the flag to half staff until everyone and his brother started telling Barry that you really should lower the flag. And then Barry did it, but he had his fingers crossed behind his back, and it was really for the guy named Mohammed, I think. Yeah. So I think it was who's the guy with the hair, the big mouth guy? Trump. I think it was Donald Trump who goaded the president into lowering the flag at the White House to half staff. We have an American flag here at the McBurney compound. It flies every day. And when I got off the flight and worked the kink out of my neck and I walked out to the flagpole to lower the flag to half staff, I realized that this is some cheap chump civilian American flagpole and you can't lower it to half staff. It's really weird. It's like a telescoping thing, and anyway, I'm very sorry. If I could lower it to half staff, I would. In spirit, our flag is flying at half staff, but in reality, I can't figure out how to get it down. So there we have it. By the way, Barry had lowered the flag at the White House to half staff for other previous mass killings, including those poor black folks who got shot by that white racist maniac just a few weeks ago. But he had to be told to lower it for the Marines. Why? Because he hates the Marines. And he didn't feel bad because his side had struck a blow. Not necessarily his side meaning the Islamists. His side meaning the chaos. That's what he wants. He wants turmoil and conflict and chaos. Because I think that's his religion. He grew up on it with the radicals in the 60s influencing his mom. And he just thinks that chaos for chaos' sake is a worthy end in and of itself. And the guy's just dangerous, that's all. Do we have more on Barry? I hate to give this guy so much press, but he is the president of the United States. Let's see here. You remember 32-year-old Catherine Steinle murdered on San Francisco's Pier 14 by an illegal alien? That's been a huge story over the past couple weeks. Well, as of, let's see, when did this story come down? This is the 13th. What is today? Gosh, this is almost, anyway, I'm a little bit behind, ladies and gentlemen. Barry had not contacted their family, hadn't made a phone call, hadn't made a public statement about the fact that this woman was shot to death in her father's arms in broad daylight in front of God and everybody, and the whole country's outraged about it. And you try to find Barry on it, you can't find him with a GPS. That guy's hiding so deep down. He doesn't say a word about it. Yet, over the past week or so, Barry took the time to write and release 46 personal letters this month alone to felons in prison for nonviolent drug offenses whose sentences he has commuted. So Barry writes, he commutes the sentence of 40-some-odd sentences of these drug dealers and writes them personal letters, but can't see fit to even address the fact that Catherine Steinle was murdered by an illegal alien that Barry probably released into the wild. That's probably why he's avoiding it. Now, these folks that Barry commuted their sentence, I'm all for commuting the sentence of drug offenders. I don't think drug offenders, dealers, whatever, I don't think they should be locked up. I think all the prisons should be emptied. And all the prisoners should be told, okay, you've got one chance. That's it, because from now on, if you're caught dealing drugs, the penalty will be death. Of course, I don't believe there should be any prisons. So I'm not offended by Barry commuting these sentences because I don't believe in prison. I don't think it's doing anybody any good. But the fact that he writes letters to these dope dealers, but here's a woman whose story is in the center of the news and in the forefront of everyone's mind, and he doesn't even seem to care. So why did he commute these drug dealers' sentences? I think it's liberal guilt. I think Barry does drugs, and so he feels guilty about these guys in prison for dealing drugs. Yes, I use the present tense. Barry does drugs, so he feels guilty about people in federal prison over drugs. That's that same guilt complex, by the way, that will empty out Guantanamo Bay before the sapper who got under the wire leaves the White House. It's that same guilt complex. Meanwhile, he doesn't have any guilt about killing children or robbing the ones he allows to survive. He has no guilt complex about that. Yeah, they kill a third of a generation, him and his liberal leftist humanist maniacs. And the two-thirds that survive, they rob them blind without batting an eye. Not a bit of guilt, not a stitch of guilt. But when Barry's sitting up in the White House getting high, he feels guilty about the other. Yeah, he feels guilty. That's what it is. All right. I've actually got a comment from one of the drug dealers that Barry released. He commuted the life sentence of one Jason Hernandez. And Hernandez says, President Obama gave me my life back. I see him like a father now. And like any son, you want to make your father proud. That's what my aim is. Now, Hernandez had been sentenced to life in 1998 back in Texas for dealing meth and crack cocaine at the age of 21. Breitbart reports that he now mentors youth, and he works as a welder in a muffler shop. Well, that's just wonderful. Fine. I hope he doesn't mess up his life any further. But this is what the left specializes in. In causing relatively weak-minded people to look upon them as if they were their father and mother, and as if Barry's there to actually take care of people. And I think there's a whole generation of people from the age of 6 to 60 who all think that it's the president's job to take care of them, and the president is like their father. And, Barry's just not living up to it, that's all. He's not a very good father figure. What with the liberal guilt, the Guantanamo Bay, the baby killing, the wholesale theft of all the wealth of an entire generation of people who haven't even been born yet. Oh, that's right. Barry didn't do that all alone. Yeah, he was assisted by John McCain, Lindsey Graham, Bob Dole. Well, mentioning Bob Dole, I think that's kind of redundant. Anyway, in cahoots with the Republican establishment, Barry has butchered one-third of a generation and robbed the other two-thirds. Yeah. All right, now the biggest news of the week, obviously, the biggest news was the Ashley Madison hack. Yeah. You all familiar with the Ashley Madison website? They help facilitate adulterous affairs, which should be a criminal offense. Well, they were hit by hackers who threatened to release all the information about all their customers. All kinds of dirty little secrets. Yeah. The parent company of Ashley Madison, they issued a statement. By the way, the parent company is called Avid Life Media. And they promote adultery in public, in front of God and everybody, and nobody seems to care. Because apparently adultery is not illegal anymore. And it's not, and it should be, that's all. It's a criminal offense. All of you people who are down on me for insisting that homosexuality should be a criminal offense, remember that I include adultery as well, okay? I'm equal opportunity when it comes to applying the appropriate justice. So they released a statement saying, "We are working with law enforcement agencies which are investigating this criminal act," Ashley Madison said. "Yes, we've been hacked. It's a criminal act. Their whole existence is a criminal act. I can't believe the police." Anyway. It's just bizarre. Well, half the police department's probably members of... Anyway. And they claim to have some 40 million members. I have no idea if but adultery is quite a popular pastime these days. I'm certainly aware of that. We've been trying to keep track here at the McBurney compound, but definitely more than half of the shootings you hear about on the local news are related directly to adultery or fornication.
Cheating, for sure.
Cheating, oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. More than half the shootings you see on TV are directly related to fornication and adultery, and yeah, there you go. So law enforcement is working with Ashley Madison to help them continue carrying out their criminal behavior. Let's see. They also bragged about, they used to brag about their data security, but apparently someone got to them. Now, we don't know who got to them, but according to this report from Money, let's see, this is from CNN. The hackers appear to be upset over the company's full delete service, which promises to completely erase a user's profile. Well, the hackers say that it's a lie, that the stuff isn't deleted, and that Ashley Madison has been charging a fee for a service that they did not carry out. My guess is I don't know who these hackers are. I mean, I hope it's some crusading good guys against adultery, but it's probably just some upset former customer who found out that his dirty little secrets didn't get erased, even though he paid the $19 fee. That's probably who the hacker is. They issued a manifesto in which they called themselves the Impact Team. And well, whatever. Anyway, couldn't have happened to a nicer group of people. I hope their business is utterly destroyed, and I hope their headquarters burned to the ground of natural causes. Yeah, I'd prefer a lightning strike. That would be very poetic. But Ashley Madison, of course.
Sinkhole.
Oh, that would be even better. A sinkhole.
Also,
yeah, a sinkhole would be the best way for the Ashley Madison headquarters to be retired into the annals of history. Let's hope for that. If you want to pray for something worthwhile, pray for a sinkhole to open up and swallow the Ashley Madison headquarters. People always wonder, what should I pray for? I'm not sure what to pray for. Well, here at the Weekly Worldview, we try to help. We don't just talk about problems. We do our best to actually offer solutions.
Seven sides.
Doug McBurney joined in studio. That's all. Audio engineer.
She just wants to play.
I have serious news. It's the dueling guitar solo. She can't resist. Back and forth, one guy, then the other guy. Each guy trying to top the other guy. Gotta love it. That was back when rock and roll was, well, alive, at least. Now I've been distracted. I was talking about, yes, Ashley Madison. Anyway, to try to restore your faith in humanity, I don't know if that can be done, but I'm in Jamaica, Queens. I don't know a soul, right? It's an extremely diverse community. I don't know anybody. And I'm trying to unpack a crate that's screwed together with extremely long wood screws, Phillips head. And I'm trying to do it with the office manager's little tiny screwdriver that they keep around the office for little jobs. Finally, my hands are blistered and bloody, and I just can't do it anymore. And I told her, I'm going to go down the street, and I'm going to find a drill. And she looked at me like I was insane. I said, I'll find someone who'll loan me a drill. She said, you crazy. You crazy. That's what she said. You crazy. Anyway, I start walking down the street. I see an auto mechanic shop. So I walk into the auto mechanic shop, walk up to one of the mechanics, and there's a cordless drill sitting right there. I said, hey, do you have a cordless drill? He says, no. I said, I really need a cordless drill. I showed him my hand with the blood and the blisters. I said, I'm trying to unpack this crate, and I'm having a hard time. I really could use your drill. He says, talk to that guy. So I looked at the drill, I looked at him, and I realized I'll go talk to that guy, the other guy, because this guy was not going to loan me a drill. That's all. So I went and talked to the other guy, showed him the bloody hand. I said, I'm installing equipment at the doctor's office right across. Can you help me out? I need a drill. So we looked at each other. We locked eyes for a moment and tried to decide if we were going to act like civilized people. And I could tell that. Well, I pulled my wallet out, and I slapped it on his desk. I said, I'll leave my wallet right here. I'll be back in less than 15 minutes. And he said, okay. He gives me the drill. I walk back into the doctor's office. The office manager is dumbfounded that I have walked the streets of Jamaica, Queens, and just borrowed a drill from somebody.
Did you leave the wallet?
I left my wallet with this guy in Jamaica, Queens. I didn't know this guy from Adam. Left my wallet. It's got cash, credit cards. You know, it's got everything in there. Left it with him. Because I have some confidence that there are decent human beings out there. Unpacked the crate, returned in less than 15 minutes, returned the drill to the auto mechanic, retrieved my wallet, didn't even look at it, didn't even check, put it in my pocket, went back and did my thing. Anyways, later on that night, I got to go get something to eat, so I whip out my wallet, and then I remember, oh, that's right, I left this wallet with this mechanic who I never met before in Jamaica, Queens, which is kind of a rough neighborhood, okay? It was a little rougher than I'm used to, anyways. Anyway, not a penny missing, not a dollar. The guy never even opened the wallet. So there are still decent people out there, despite the fact that the mentally ill, suicidal children are hell-bent on destroying America, and they're working on the foundation right now, tearing it apart. I told you how the Republicans and the pro-life industry, Scott Walker and all those, have basically eliminated the God-given right to life. That's gone. And, of course, the mentally ill sex perverts are destroying marriage. So they got marriage, and now, just as I predicted, they're angry about it. Listen to this. Who is from Breitbart? I know, it seems like I get all my news from Breitbart. I guess they've got the best reporters. I don't know. I just call them like I see them, folks. You don't hear me quoting the New York Times a lot. You know, or I do CNN once in a while. Didn't I just do CNN? Yeah, the Ashley Madison story was from CNN because they're obsessed with that kind of thing over there. But the governor of Texas was accosted by a sex pervert, homosexual activist, who screamed at the governor as the governor was at the airport trying to get on a plane. This mentally deranged homosexual starts screaming at him, telling him he wants him to go to hell. This is, what's the governor of Texas name there? Rick Perry. Rick Perry. Well, former governor. That's right. This isn't Rick Perry. That's why I can't remember this. They have a new governor down there, and I don't even know his name. What's the new governor's name? Well, anyway, you people all know who he is. Oh, Governor Abbott. Something Abbott. Okay, he's the guy. He's trying to get on a plane. This deranged homosexual says, I hope you go to hell because of your stance on gay marriage. And then the man said to the governor, I'm going to see you on the plane. And he gave him that look, you know, that homos give you right before they're about to just froth at the mouth and flip out. Start scratching and slapping. So anyway, security had to remove the guy because he basically just threatened the governor of Texas. He's going ballistic. Now, these homos, they got what they wanted. They got marriage. They took it. They got it. And now they're angry about it. And they're going to get angrier and angrier if they don't get more. And what's the one thing they have to have? Above all other things, they have to have every single other person bless it. Now that they've got it, you're not going to be allowed to tell them that you disagree about it. Or they're going to get angry and hiss and spit and scratch you. All right, yeah, that's... It's not love, darn it. A lot of our audience may not know what the guy's saying. What with the reverb and the 80s mix and all that. It's kind of hard to follow. But no, it's not love, and we do disagree, and we are going to stand up, some of us. And we're going to continue to say that not only is homosexual marriage an abomination, but homosexuality itself is criminal behavior. Some of us are going to be willing to stand up and say that. And if you want to hiss and spit at us, that's fine. Now listen to what happened over on... let's see. This was on Inside Edition. No, wait a second. I'm sorry. No, this couldn't have been Inside Edition. Where did this happen? Anyway, Ben Shapiro and a transgender reporter for Inside Edition, Zoe Ter. Now, Zoe's a boy. And if you ever see Zoe Ter, he's the he calls himself the world's first transgendered journalist. And it looks like a guy in makeup, okay? That he looks like a guy in 5 o'clock shadow with the foundation over it, right? And the poorly matched rouge on the cheeks. It's just the hairy arms. I mean, just get out of here with that. And he's a big guy, too. I mean, he's not a small guy. This is Zoe Ter. Yeah. They were debating homosexual marriage. Ben Shapiro, he is the Breitbart editor-at-large. Ben Shapiro, a somewhat conservative fellow. And he got into a debate with Zoe, the guy who puts on makeup. And Turry argued that they were arguing about whether or not Bruce Jenner should have gotten the award at the ESPYs. And Turry says, is he brave? Of course he's brave. I mean, she. Of course she's brave. I had a hard time reading that because I have a hard time like with the whole she thing. The pronouns are really difficult for me when it comes to homosexuals getting married or transgendering or transgenering or well, all that. It's just very hard to follow. Anyway, Ter said that being transgender is about the bravest thing you can do. Oh, wait, but you know what? Zoe Ter didn't say it like that. For some reason, the queers, when they trans over there to become a woman, their voice suddenly becomes like this. Now that they're wearing the dress and the makeup, they're like, all right. You got a problem with me. So Zoe said, being transgender is about the bravest thing you can do. And Ben Shapiro, to which Ben Shapiro said, why are we mainstreaming delusion? And so the tranny just got mad, right? So you can't ask that. You can't call self-mutilation a delusion. You can't do that anymore. It's now mainstream. Well, Ben Shapiro just questioned that. Why are we mainstreaming delusion? At which that time the tranny went ballistic and said, you will call him Caitlin. Her, Caitlin. You will call her Caitlin. Because I guess Shapiro kept referring to Bruce as Bruce. And that made the tranny even madder. Shapiro said, okay. He said, it's not about disrespect. He said, facts don't care about your feelings. Every chromosome in Jenner's body is male, with the exception of some of his sperm cells, because they don't, yeah, some of those are female. But anyway, so the tranny got really upset about this. Oh, And Shapiro also mentioned that Jenner still has all of his male appendages. And you don't want to make any reference to that when you got a tranny there that they haven't gone all the way because they get mad about that. So the tranny responds to Shapiro, "We both know that chromosomes don't necessarily mean you're male or female." At which point Shapiro's just like, okay, obviously. Shapiro says, "Well, what are your genetics, sir?" To this boy dressed as a girl. The one thing you could do to send a tranny over the edge is call him sir. Tur then said to Shapiro, "You cut that out now or you'll go home in an ambulance." And like was going to physically beat up Ben Shapiro. So anyway, just as I stated, ladies and gentlemen, now that the homosexuals got what they want, they're just going to get madder and madder about it. And it's just going to get uglier and uglier out there. And it all started because Christians and normal, decent people decided that homosexuality was no longer a crime, which it had been for approximately 5,000 years, except for brief periods of time before the collapse of major civilizations. Okay, that's all. Well, as soon as we allowed that line to be crossed, basically, people would, there's no doubt that it would lead to the bottom of the worst, and homosexual marriage is just the beginning. There's stuff that's worse than that that's coming, more disgusting, more destructive, more vile, and more abominable. It's on its way, folks. I don't even want to talk about it. Oh, well, here it is. That's a perfect segue into this next story. The Pentagon, Defense Secretary Ash Carter, says that he's ordering a six-month study aimed at formally ending the, what do they call this? The Associated Press calls it ending one of the last gender or sexuality-based barriers to military service. That's right, the Pentagon's current regulations banning transgender individuals from serving. Carter Ash says, well, they're outdated and we need to study lifting them, which means they will be lifted before Barack Obama leaves the bathhouse. I mean, the White House. Yeah, Carter, and listen to what Carter Ash says. This is how blatant and flagrant and in your face these leftist humanist scum who are destroying our country and our military. This is how just nakedly aggressive they are about their destruction. Carter Ash said the study group will begin with the presumption that transgendered people should be able to serve. So why have a study if you're going to start with the assumption? But he's willing to say that, hey, we're starting from that assumption. You people sit down, shut up, and get in line because this is going to happen, okay? Because the president says it's going to happen. It's going to happen. Yeah, he says trannies should be able to serve without adverse impact on military effectiveness and readiness. Yeah, okay. The plan, they say the plan is going to give the services time to methodically work through the legal, medical, and administrative issues. They're going to have 6 months to study. What are we going to do with the bathrooms? And that's just the start of it. What are we going to do with the barracks? How are we going to arrange the foxholes when the trannies? Oh, well, let's study it. We've got 6 months. We'll figure. The group also has to develop uniform guidelines. Fabulous. That's the one rule for the new uniforms. They must be fabulous. During the six-month study period, no trannies can be kicked out. In fact, every transgendered case has to come right to the desk of the Secretary of Defense himself. If anyone wants to kick a tranny out, the case file has to go onto the desk of the secretary. All right. Of course, the other big issue, how much will the military be willing to pay for transgendered surgery? Will they train? Will the physical training or testing standards be changed? Where are we gonna house these transgendered freaks of nature? What about birthing? Yeah, no, not the traditional birthing that's going on in the Navy right now with all the girls getting pregnant. No, we're talking about where are these perverts going to sleep on the ship so that everyone else isn't terrified because there's a freak on the ship. What bathrooms? Yeah, yeah. Now, listen to what the Associated Press does, these evil journalists. They say the military has dealt with many similar questions as it integrated the ranks by race, gender, and sexual orientation. So lumping again our fine black and brown brothers and sisters in with these mentally deranged sex perverts. I just hope my black brothers and sisters and my brown brothers and sisters, I hope they are as offended as I am that these journalists are lumping you in with a bunch of perverts. I myself do not do that. Certainly not. All right, the move, this study group, according to the AP, the move follows several weeks of high-level cruising in the Pentagon among military. Did I say cruising? I'm sorry, I meant meetings. I apologize. Military leaders have pointed to the successful integration of gays. You know, folks, the integration of homosexuals in the military, you can call it a success as much as you want, but I can assure you there's all kinds of turmoil and problems going on that we're not hearing about because nobody's allowed to talk about it. I wish I had the staff to be an investigative journalist so I could look into just what kind of turmoil is going on in the ranks, because I can assure you that everything is not all well in the barracks.
You're unbelievable. You're so unbelievable. You're unbelievable.
That's right. It is the Weekly Worldview. It is unbelievable, frankly. That's just the next thing to come now, the trannies in the barracks, and then where we go from there, folks, I just don't even want to know. We'll probably be harvesting the organs of babies that we kill. Could that ever happen? Okay. So we'll get to this now. From the Center for Medical Progress, you all saw the video, the undercover video of the Planned Parenthood executive eating salad and sipping wine while talking about how she could crush a baby one way or another to save its liver or its lungs. Shocking and outrageous. But ladies and gentlemen, when you make it legal to kill these children, it's kind of hard to regulate it after that. I mean, the horse has left the barn. You've said it's okay to kill them. It's kind of tough to get people to follow the rules about exactly how to kill them. And then what to do with their parts when they're done. How can anyone expect to regulate that? So I wonder if Troy Newman and Steve Ertelt and Jill Stanek and the National Right to Life Committee, I wonder if they're only upset about the fetal organs being harvested after 20 weeks. I wonder. Yeah. Maybe they're only upset about the organs that are being harvested and sold at a profit for those babies who are older than 20 weeks because, well, they've already said that if it's under 20 weeks, as long as you follow these rules. Anyway. Yeah, this the Center for Medical Progress, fantastic work, fellas and ladies. I'm impressed with what you did. I reported on this, I believe, about 15 years ago, the sale of baby parts, which was documented in similar horrific fashion, and there was similar outcry and outrage. And what happened? What changed? Nothing. Why? Because we've abandoned the right to life. And once you abandon that principle, there's no bottom to that. So you can all feign your outrage this week. Was I shocked? No, I was not shocked. Was I disgusted? I was disgusted because it was pretty creepy to watch that chick talk like that while she was eating at what was probably a pretty nice... That was one step closer to Mengele than I've ever gone. So, yeah, it was disgusting, but shocking, not at all, folks. Those of us who pay attention to such things have been shouting about this for at least 15 years that I know of, that this has been going on. I believe the first time I reported on this was 1999. So anyway, this is a tempest in a teapot. It'll all settle down. The Republicans will raise some cash. National Right to Life will raise some cash. Life News will get some click-throughs and some donations because they're outraged as they all abandon and leave aside the fundamental God-given right to life, which is the only barrier against this kind of demented wickedness. There's only one, and once you remove that barrier, there's nowhere to go but down. Okay? Nowhere to go but down. But Planned Parenthood, by the way, has apologized. Yep. Cecile Richards herself condescended to make a comment. She apologized for her top official's tone. She apologized for the tone. That was a little rough. Wrote with the wine and the salad, I understand. You people aren't used to this. We do it every day. We crush them, smash them, grind them up, sell them, churn them. We burn them. We slash them. We rip their arms off. We can go to lunch. We can eat lunch while we're doing it. But we understand that it might bother some of you people out there. So she apologized for the tone, but she denied the allegation that they profit from tissue donation. She says, our top priority is compassionate care. Our staff members, our staff member unfortunately spoke in a way that does not reflect that compassion.
That's Zoe.
Yeah. I personally apologize, said Cecile Richards, for my staff member's tone. As always, if there is any aspect of our work that can be strengthened, we want to know about it, she said. Spreading false information, by the way, is an age-old strategy of people hell-bent on denying women care and shaming them for exercising their rights. Now, what other right can you be shamed about? Exercise. Is there any other right that you can exercise over which someone else could possibly shame you? No, only killing your baby. Why? Because it's shameful. That's why. Cecile Richard ended with a threat, her apology. She ended her apology with a threat. She said, I want to give you a reminder. One out of every five women has been to Planned Parenthood in her life. Threatening our patients' care and rights will get politicians nowhere fast. We've fought for our patients before, and we'll fight for them again. Said Cecile Richards, apologizing. While she threatens. All right, we're almost out of time. Let's go to Donald Trump this week tweeted that Fox News, he tweeted this. He said, hey, Fox News, you shouldn't have Karl Rove on the air. He's a clown. He's a clown with zero credibility. A bushy. He says, Karl Rove wasted $400 million and didn't win. He's a total loser. Said Donald Trump. So this is why people love Donald Trump. Now, I got into an argument with one of my Christian friends, probably a veteran, too, about Trump's comments about John McCain. When Trump made the comment that he likes guys who didn't get shot down, I almost stood up in my hotel room and clapped and gave him a round of applause, a standing ovation. John McCain's been riding the fact that he was a relatively lousy pilot who got himself shot down and managed to survive prison camp. He's been riding that for 40 years as he has destroyed the country. He has destroyed the conservative movement. He's another one who has thrown aside the fundamental bedrock rights upon which our country are built. John McCain has robbed that third of a generation who he allowed to survive the abortion holocaust that he helped unleash on the country. John McCain is a shameful, loser, idiot, moron who should be run out of town on a rail. And a hero is someone who lays down his life for his friends. A hero is someone who jumps on a grenade. A hero is a guy who runs 15 times through grazing fire to drag his buddies out of danger. John McCain didn't do any of that. He's not a hero. Everyone who goes to war is not a hero. Everyone who gets shot is not a hero. Everyone who gets caught and sent to prison camp is not a hero. And all you people who didn't serve, maybe you feel like you got to kiss his backside. I don't. And I think Donald Trump is absolutely right. Do I think Donald Trump is going to be the president? No, I do not. But let me say that I believe Donald Trump, being not a lawyer and not a politician, I think he's the only one in the race who might do the electoral math and just in a cold, calculated way decide to become pro-life purely for political gain. If he looks at the map and he's with his advisors and he says, look, what can I do? I need another 8%. That's all I need to take this thing. And they say, well, you know what? If you really go strong pro-life, even support some of these personhood, yeah, that'll get you 8, 12, it might even get you 15%. All right, let's do it. I can see Trump doing it just for political gain. Because I harbor no delusion that any of these politicians or business leaders, I don't think any of them are going to come to some enlightened position on the right to life. I really don't think so. I think the only way that they're ever going to come around to our way of thinking is if they think it will benefit them politically. Why? Because they're hell-bound heathens who only care about themselves, and it's very hard to reach them. But Trump is the one who could do it. All of the other Republicans, they've already discounted the pro-life vote. They think that we don't count, we don't matter, and they don't need us. And that's why they've been losing so much, so many times. I mean, the last time they won was when George W. Bush acted like he was pro-life. I mean, he was a total fraud and a liar, but he towed the line, and he got himself elected twice. Anyway, so Trump could do it just for political gain, possibly. And then maybe even follow through, because he's just a guy who gets things done and generally probably keeps his word. Anyway, but it's a long shot, because he's been taught, just like all the rest, the politicians, the pastors, the pro-life industry leaders, he's been taught that the right to life can be, it's negotiable. It's, you know, we can put it on the table. You know, how many do you want? You want five, you want 5 or 10 out of 100? Maybe we'll take that. They've been taught that you can negotiate the right to life and that it can be tossed out, forgotten about, ignored, and that you can still call yourself pro-life. So the more likely thing that Trump will do is he will entertain us with a lot of great one-liners like this. But he will not come through for that which is good and righteous and the American way and all that. He won't do it. All right. I'm going to close with this because WorldNet Daily has been running weekly kind of little mini biographies about people who are important in history. And they had an interesting one this week about the people behind the Scopes Monkey Trial. Are you people familiar with the Scopes Monkey Trial? Anyway, there's a great movie about it called Alleged that I recommend to you if you want to know what really happened at the Scopes Monkey Trial. But the Scopes Monkey Trial took place in the 1920s. And it was, for the first time, it pitted an evolution-based education against a creation-based education. Everybody thinks that the atheists won, and that's pretty much true. They did, even though I believe they lost the case. They won the day. Well, Clarence Darrow defended evolution in the Scopes Monkey Trial. He previously had defended Leopold and Loeb, two homosexual teenage thrill killers who murdered a 14-year-old boy. Darrow obtained a pardon for anarchists in 1886 who blew up a pipe bomb in Chicago, killing 7 policemen. Clarence Darrow, who defended evolution in the Scopes Monkey Trial, also defended Patrick Eugene Prendergast in 1894, who had confessed to murdering the Chicago mayor. He also defended Eugene Debs, and he also represented the Western Federation of Miners leaders who were charged with murdering the former Idaho governor. So that's Clarence Darrow. He was on the side of the atheists. In 1911, Darrow defended the McNamara brothers, charged with dynamiting the L.A. Times building, killing 21 employees. After being implicated in bribing jurors, Darrow was banned from practicing law in California. And then in 1925, Darrow defended John Scopes, a Tennessee high school biology teacher, who taught the theory of evolution. Now, the attorney defending creation was three-time presidential candidate William Jennings Bryan. Bryan objected specifically to a tooth being presented as proof that humans evolved from apes. Of course, we all know later that that tooth was found to be that of an extinct pig. I'll read you a statement that Bryan issued regarding the importance of the Scopes monkey trial. Bryan said, quote, "A religion which teaches personal responsibility to God gives strength to morality. There is a powerful restraining influence in the belief that an all-seeing eye scrutinizes every thought and word and act of the individual. One needs the inner strength which comes with the conscience, with the conscious presence of a personal God." And that, ladies and gentlemen, is what has been abandoned. And that's why we're in a free fall on grease skids on our way to the bottom. The pro-life industry leaders and Scott Ryan, who basically put the final nail in the coffin of the right to life this week, I think will be remembered in similar fashion as the Scopes monkey trial if something doesn't change dramatically. And we'll keep working to try to do that. You do the same, ladies and gentlemen. I want to thank my friends at KGOV, Denver Bible Church, American Right to Life, and my other brother there who makes it all happen here at the Weekly Worldview Studio. Should the Lord tarry, we will return next week. And until then, may the grace of God go with you, and may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.